Right, if we get started, so welcome everybody. It's the Scrutiny Commission for Old Farnborough Borough Council meeting this evening. There are a number of things I would like to remind people of before we start with the items on the agenda. Please note that this meeting is being recorded and the recording will be made available on the council's website following the meeting. Under the Open and Political Government Bodies regulations, people may film or record this meeting and this is outside of the council's control. However, people wishing to film or record the meeting should do so in a way that does not disrupt the business of the meeting. Also, so that the meeting is not disturbed, please could I ask everyone present to please turn off your mobile phones or switch them to silent and ensure that your environment is distraction free. Thank you. This meeting of the Scrutiny Commission is being held as a hybrid meeting with some participants joining virtually. I'll now ask those members if they can see and hear the meeting. So if we start with Justin Henry. Can you see and hear the meeting?
Yes, Chair, I can both see and hear.
Thank you. Ian Brown?
Yes, thank you, Chair. Confirmation.
Thank you. And Kevin Bruin?
Yes, Chair, thank you. I can hear and see. Thank you.
Lovely. Thank you. So we start with the first item. So we have got apologies. We've got apologies, Lovely.
Yes, Chair. So we've had apologies from Councillor Beverly Gray and we've got Councillor Corey Losey as a substitute. And we've also had apologies from Councillor Seaton.
Lovely. Thank you. So we've got item two, the minutes of the previous meeting. Are we all happy with the minutes from the meeting last time?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. I'll get those signed at the end, Sally. Then item three, we've got disclosures of pecuniary interest and other registrable and non-registrable interests. Have we got any this evening?
Nope.
Thank you. Item four, declarations of the party with. And item five, questions under scrutiny committee procedures 11.16. We've not had any questions submitted this evening. Item six is pre-decision scrutiny of any specific financial matters to be considered by Cabinet. We haven't got any of those items this evening. So we move to item seven. So Cabinet items for pre-decision scrutiny. So we've got four of these this evening. So if we start with item 7A, which is the assets review. So we've got lead member Councillor Mear, leader of the council, and we have Justin Henry and Ian Brown with us on this item. So Councillor Mear, would you like to introduce the item?
Cheers, thank you very much, welcome to the committee, everybody. I was going to say is that we know we had this discussion before the elections about whether we would be staying in Southfields or on Southfields campus or move in elsewhere. I think for the newer councillors, we did a feasibility study to see if that would be something that was feasible. I am going to pass on to Justin and Ian in a moment to further elaborate on what happened on that feasibility study and the outcome of it. But generally, things have moved on since we did the initial decision to look if we were going to move. The world's moved on and the costs of moving moved on as well, I think the details in the report. So in essence, the thinking is now is that actually we will do make good with what we have because that's probably the most cost-effective thing to do. But obviously that does have some cost as well, so, and that's why this paper is in the room. Thank you.
Thank you.
I'll pass on to officers if they want to add.
Justin, do you want to follow up on that?
I think he's frozen.
Well, Ian, if we come to you.
Yeah, heaven forbid. Yes, thank you, Chair. Thank you, delegates. Yeah, just really to build up a little on Councillor Meyer's introduction there. As promised to scrutiny, as we got further down the line, we would bring further reports to the panel for discussion. This is one of those reports. Essentially, following the results of the original investigative surveys, Councillor Meyer is correct in that the costs for development of a new site have now proven to be prohibitive. However, the council is still committed to becoming a net zero carbon by 2030, and we're committed to reducing our overall operational costs. So as a result of that, we feel it's appropriate to make some investments in the portfolio that we currently own, rather than to try and move out. As was said, the costs are prohibitive. So the intention of this cabinet report, forgive me if I'm stepping on your toes here, Justin, but you froze a second ago. So the intention of this cabinet report then is to seek some preliminary funding to engage the professional services of consultant designers and engineers in order to invest in the current Southfields campus site to bring down the overall operational and management costs of the site. Whilst doing that, we obviously also commit towards being a net zero carbon council in the same time. So that's the basic premise of this report. It is supported by two other documents, two attachments. If anybody would like to read those, given they've got some time and leisure, I wouldn't want to bore the panel with the detail now. But there is some detail in there about the overall cost effectiveness of the investment that we need to do against the costs of new build properties. We're of an opinion now that we're in a situation where the cost would be prohibitive with a payback period in excess of 20 to 30 years, whereas what we would intend to do now is do some short-term investment to prolong the life expectancy of our current buildings. I think that's about it, Justin, really, is it? Or have you anything else to add?
No, I think that's that'll probably suffice. The only other thing to add is, as noted in the report, the standard governance around activities that will occur as we move through this particular piece will obviously run through the standard governance channels. So when we have a program of work that's been planned out and costed and we need the capital, it'll obviously go through the standard kind of decision-making process, scrutiny, cabinet, and then on to council for addition to the capital program and things of that nature. So there's still going to be plenty of oversight in terms of what's happening and how it's going to happen. There will be exemptions around a lot of those papers because we will have financially sensitive information, but those are still available for all members to read, regardless of the fact that they're exempt. So it's a case of just saying, if it's our financial affairs out there or something that would perhaps sway competition, then we wouldn't want to give anybody an unfair advantage.
Thank you, Justin. Anything you want to follow up on?
No, nothing further to add. So happy to take any questions and myself and the officer here are available.
Yeah, lovely, thank you. So if we move on to questions, I've just got a couple, just quite simple ones. Ian just touched on the fact that we're looking to prolong the life expectancy of our existing building rather than build a new building. Roughly what time scale are we looking at? So obviously if we built a new building, that would take us sort of significantly into the future. The funding that we're looking to put into our current building now, what sort of life expectancy will that give us? I mean, I'm only looking for an approximate, but how far into the future could that take us?
Do you want me to answer that, Justine, if that's all right? Yeah, a really good question. Give you an example of the site where you're currently seated, the Southfields complex, that was built circa 1980, I believe. The life expectancy of the infrastructure in those buildings is around 25 years with no maintenance and no full maintenance or repairing regime. We've well surpassed that level of infrastructure maintenance through due diligence and appropriate management. So the intention is that by improving the infrastructure in the building without too much in the way of structural improvements to the main office building, we could further prolong the life of that building by another 25 to 30 years, which if we were to invest by comparison into a new building, we would probably only be designing the life expectancy of 35 to 40 years anyway. So the cost comparables become very favourable towards staying in our existing premises against investing in a new building, which we will still have to manage and maintain. Does that answer the question?
Yeah, it does. Thank you.
Thank you.
And then the second one was just more for clarity. So we're looking to approve in the report today of 500,000. That's obviously to get us to the next stage. But from the report, it says the headline budget, we're looking at approximately 6 million. So potentially around 6 million to spend to get us to where we want to be. But the report today is seeking to confirm the 500,000 to get us to the next stage of the project. Yeah.
That is absolutely correct, Chair. The 6 million figure is, there's not a lot of specificity behind that. It's saying there is going to be a budget. 6 million at this point, without any of the further investigation, feels appropriate. But of course, all of that will crystallize or solidify as we go through it and we get more detail and we have plans.
Yeah, lovely, thank you. Any other questions?
No,
yes. That's a nice simple one for us. Okay, if we go to a vote then, are we all in favour of the recommendations in the report?
Yep.
Yes.
Yeah? Yep, lovely. Thank you. Thank you, Justin. Thank you, Ian. Thank you, Councillor Mayer. Yeah.
So when you see a 20-storey sky.
No more holidays.
So if we move to item 7B, so we've got the workforce development strategy. So we've got new member, Councillor Ashcroft, with us. And then we've got officers Helen Breton and Kevin Bruin with us for this item. Councillor Ashcroft, if we start with you, can you introduce the item?
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you.
So this is a new strategy which replaces the previous people strategy. And as like Rob said, his introduction, obviously the staff is very important, and running the council will be able to attract staff and retain valuable staff, also, developing and increasing their capability is obviously the core of what we need to do, and this encompassing. I think the other thing to say is this is obviously the high level strategy document, and there's going to be an associated delivery plan. So a lot of the detail will be obviously in delivery plan. And also inbuilt is monitoring and consultation. So it should be developing documents. So the aim of this is not to be too detailed. This is showing our vision, how it fits with a corporate strategy, and then I say that with a detailed plan, which can then be flexible depending on how it's monitored and how it's seen to be effective. So that's the other thing to say is that I've been involved in HR, my own organisation, and this really encompasses all the current best practices, really, as far as I can see.
Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Ashcroft. I think you covered most of it there. I think you touched on it. It sits within the suite of documents, so you will have seen the corporate strategy a month or so ago. The design version follows that same design and follows very, very similar. In undertaking and compiling the strategy, Kevin specifically has undertaken quite a lot of consultation with different groups within the organisation. And that has sort of got us to the point where we're at. So I don't know if Kevin wants to say anything, but happy to take any questions from
Thank you. Yes, I'll just add, I think the key point for the organisation moving forward is we're still very much in a very tight job market, and recruitment is certainly a huge challenge, and retention consequently, particularly in some of our professional areas. So a lot of the focus is either directly related to those areas or indirectly to ensure that we have the right people in place in the organisation going forwards.
Thank you.
I know if I didn't hold you retaining really good staff throughout the years. I just really want to a confirmation that our salaries will be competitive with clients to be able to keep staff, and then going forward, we're attractive to become a workforce as well. That's, you know, it's been an issue over the years, hasn't it, retaining good staff?
Thank you, Chair. Yes, indeed, they are two very important strands. So I don't know if previously there's been more focus on recruitment rather than retention, but obviously they are equally as important. So you mentioned there about salary benchmarking, so that is something that we do through East Midlands councils, through other authorities in Leicestershire. Obviously we try to keep within the demographic of Charnwood and not necessarily looking at some of those probably London boroughs or the south kind of areas. But that is something that we do on a regular basis, and there is quite an active network within Leicestershire of HR managers that do that. In terms of recruitment as part of the current people strategy, we have been more recently doing quite a lot of work around attracting people to our website, making sure that we identify the benefits of working both in the public sector but also within local government and Charnwood specifically. So they are very key areas that we're looking at.
Thank you. Thanks, Helen.
Thank you. I've just got a couple. So, how has working from home impacted the culture at Charnwood?
Kevin, do you want to pick this one up?
Because obviously it's been happening for a while now, so I think we would be starting to see and read kind of how that is having an impact on us, if it is.
Yes, I mean, undoubtedly it is in many different respects. I think the main thing for Charnwood Borough Council is we have a process called the Agile Working Plans, where we actually engage with staff to discuss agile working from the point of view of obviously service delivery first and foremost, but also in terms of what's possible and preferences in terms of how people work. And I think through those agile working plans, we've been able to minimise a lot of the issues that other organisations have come across. The key point being engagement to staff from the start. So if they're part of the process of putting forward ideas about how we can work, they're going to be a lot more supportive than if they feel that there's a process that is forced on them in some way through their managers. I mean, in terms of the organisation as a whole, obviously there's a different feel about the building. We were pretty much a traditional office-based organisation prior to the pandemic. Certainly from our staff surveys, we've through that transition period, we've actually been able to see that staff as a whole prefer this way of working, and we've tracked that through the last few surveys. It's interesting, the last survey saw a slight narrowing of that gap, but there's still a definite gap of preference for agile working. And without a doubt, it's a significant factor in terms of recruitment. I've noticed we are recruiting now a lot more people who haven't worked in local government before. It seems like we're recruiting a lot of younger people, which is good, but it might be just relative to my age, it's difficult to say. But certainly when we run the induction programme and discuss people's plans and why they're working at Charnwood, the agile working offer is really high in terms of the preference for people working here. So there are undoubtedly challenges in many different areas with agile working, but overall I think as an organisation we have been managing it very well.
Okay, thank you. And just one last one from me. How are vacancy levels affecting staff morale?
I think that varies very much from service to service. So undoubtedly we've got some services where it's more of a problem. We've got probably the most of the organisation where it's not been a significant issue. And there could be mixed reasons for that. You know, in some areas it may be due to still we've got continuation of staff turnover. In another area it could be to do with the difficulties of recruiting fully qualified professional officers who, you know, have the relevant qualifications required in those specific fields.
And we are employing a range of tactics as such. So we're looking at the roles, we're looking at whether we can career grade them, so stretch them over multiple pay grades. We're looking at offering the different levels of apprenticeship. So there are obviously the more senior apprenticeships in terms of degree level, etc. So we are looking at a different range of tactics to try and fill those essentially holes.
Thank you. Any questions on that? No? Lovely, thank you.
Thank you.
If we can go to a vote on that, are we all happy with the recommendations in the report?
Yeah.
Yep. Lovely, thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.
And then if we move to item 7C, so we've got the biodiversity improvements and change of mowing arrangements. So if we can invite Anne Gray to the table, and then we've got Matt Bradford. Okay, so Councillor Gray, would you like to introduce the item?
Yes, thank you, Chair. This is a pilot scheme to reduce mowing on some of our sites. I should say on part of some of our sites. And we're hoping this way to increase biodiversity, which we all know is very important at the moment. This is part of our open spaces strategy as well. I think we've all been at plans meetings where we've seen yet another vote on another field that's going to be built on. But Charnwood's own, the council, owns about 1% of the land in Charnwood. So by reducing mowing on certain sites from 10 times a year to 2, this will enable certain species to thrive and flourish, whereas if the grass is cut very short, that really doesn't have any value at all to nature. It's just an area that people can walk over. I do want to stress that it's not the grass verges. I think some people are going to be worried when they hear about this, that are maintained by the county council along roads and so on. So it won't be something that affects visibility and is dangerous. It won't really, we don't think, save us any money, because although we're mowing fewer times, the grass will have to lie there and then be collected, whereas at the moment, when it's cut in and just little bits of it remain, it will just disappear by itself. So I think this is something really that ties in with everything we're doing at Charnwood Borough Council at the moment to help the climate and to help nature as well.
Thank you. Matt?
I've not got a lot to add. Thanks, Chair. I think Councillor Gray summed that up very well, so nothing to add. I think we're both happy to take any questions that the panel members may have.
Okay. I've got a few questions to start with. One is that I note that we're doing the review period, it's part of 3 years, and that we review after 2 years. Is there a reason why it's 2 years and not after one full mowing season?
There is, Chair, in that I think if the pilot's a success, there are a number of different ways in which it could go. We could make the areas specified in the report permanent on their own, which would be quite simple to do, but we could choose to extend this over a number of different sites across the borough. So if we see the improvements that we're hoping to see in biodiversity, we've got potentially lots of other locations where this could be rolled out to. So that 12 months, the review between the sort of 2 years and the 3 year end of the pilot, we could survey the sites and discuss with our contractors the potential to roll it out on other sites. The main driver for this is to improve biodiversity. If we adopt this on a larger scale, there is a potential to save some money, and that also involves a negotiation with our contractor. We're partway through our contract at the moment, so there will be a sort of variation process to go through as well, where we can negotiate the savings to be achieved if we adopt this on a much larger scale.
Okay. I couldn't see anywhere in the report where we've done any consultation with residents. I noticed that quite a lot of the sites are in or near residential areas. Are we sure that these areas aren't areas that are well used by local residents? Because if it was just around the corner from my house and the local kids used it as somewhere that they play and they don't have a local park and that's the area that they use, if I was a parent in that area, I might be a bit miffed about it. So I'm just wondering how sure we are that the sites that we're looking to reduce down to 2 mows a year are areas that aren't used by residents for other things.
If I can answer that, Chair.
Thank you.
I would hope that all of the open spaces are used for recreation in the borough, and they are there to improve the street scene and for people to use to have access to green spaces. So I hope they are used. I think there's a balance here, really, we have an obligation to improve biodiversity. We've got a huge biodiversity loss issue in the UK at the moment. So as a public authority, we've got a duty to lead from the front, really. I think some of the changes that are suggested won't suit everybody, and I think there is potential for complaints, and we've highlighted that in the risk table. I think some members of the public would still like short mown grass, and others will see the benefit in what was suggested in the report. I think what we're trying to do is to strike a balance. So on some of the larger open spaces, we've segregated the areas, so some of the grass will be left long, but other areas will maintain the 10 cuts a year as well, so people will have a choice. Some sites along, so there's one site along Epinal Way in Loughborough at the moment, there isn't a lot of sort of usage there, probably not dog walking or children playing there at the moment because of its location. All of that site has been suggested for semi-improved grassland. So I think we're trying to take a balanced approach, and I hope that residents acknowledge and see that, that there is the potential for a number of complaints, and I think our role is to re-educate people. So we'll do a comms campaign, do some on-site signage, and sort of maybe re-establish some expectations from the community around how open spaces are managed.
Okay, you kind of answered my next question there to a point, because it was about how we communicate it. From my perspective, I feel like we probably needed to do the communication first. It's like we're making the decision before we're doing any consultation or discussion with residents, and it feels like, for me, I would have preferred us to do that the other way around. So getting that communication and that understanding from the residents about the reasons behind it before we then go ahead and do it. I don't disagree with the principle of what we're doing. I think that we maybe needed to do more communication up front with residents prior to us saying, yeah, this is what we're definitely doing. And I would have preferred to have seen a review after 12 months rather than a review after 2 years, in case there is some particular backlash on certain areas where we can then maybe make some, it might really work in some areas and if we haven't got any issues, then it really is making a significant difference. But we might have a particular site where we find out that the local residents really use that and it becomes not usable because we're not mowing it, and we need to be able to make changes if that is the case. From my perspective, I support the principle of it, but there is some detail within it that I'm maybe not 100% comfortable with. I'll move on to other people. yeah, Councillor Lenny.
Yeah, we've had this sort of issue on our town council in Chepshed, and whenever it's put out as a public issue, before we even start, it seems to be only the complainy people that come back, because other people think, oh yeah, that's great for wildlife, and they're happy with it, so they don't say anything. So it's one of those Marmite things, isn't it, when it comes to not cutting the grass. And we've even got a wildlife site where people keep complaining, not many, but complaining that it looks scruffy. And that's how it is. Until people get up to date with the purpose of leaving it like that, I think it's, you're opening a can of worms by putting it out to consultation publicly.
Any other questions?
Can I come back on that?
Yeah, of course.
If that's okay. What we've tried to do on a lot of the sites is to continue to mow the perimeter or desire lines and paths across the site to show that we haven't just left it and forgotten about it, that we are maintaining the site.
And the
vegetation won't grow right up to people's boundary fences and things like that as well. So we've tried to address those issues, and I hope that the areas will still look kept, although the grass will be longer, and it will be quite obvious to people that we've made a conscious decision to do that. We've got about 660 open spaces that we own on our GIS mapping system, and this is changes to 16 of those sites, so it is quite a small proportion at this stage. And I think it's inevitable that some people won't like it, but there will be other locations where the mowing regime will be as it is now, and they could use those locations as well. We've got other open spaces owners, as Councillor Lenny said, we've got parish councils that own open spaces, and developers and land trusts as well. So I'm hoping that this won't be sort of a step too far for people, and it is quite a balanced approach, I think.
Will we put signage on the area? So the locations that we've chosen, will we look to put, I mean, I'm not talking like a massive expensive sign, but some information on the area to explain why we're doing it?
Yes.
So that actual local people understand the process.
Yes.
Yeah, Councillor.
Yeah, just to say as well that we've already had one resident come forward asking, please can we include my area in a trial and not mow it? And I have to say, looking at my grass this winter, where it's used, it's not growing anyway. Because I haven't been able to cut it over the winter, but I've walked across it to get to the front door, and that's completely flat. So hopefully, if an area is used a lot by kids kicking football about or whatever, they'll still be able to do that. But that's one of the things that we'd have to take into consideration when we look at the results of the trial.
Yeah, thank you. Councillor Hopperdy.
Thank you. Thanks, Chair. I think communication is key, really key. I don't really think consultation with members of the public, I don't think, well, it's a very small proportion anyway, I don't think it would change the outcomes. And also an opportunity, if it's eventually mowed, to make some money and turn it into haylage. That would be really nice. I mean, obviously it wouldn't be worth a lot of money, but still an opportunity to turn it into hay and to sell some. So I think my key point is communication is key, and I support it anyway. I think it's a great, great project.
Yeah. So I was just going to say, you did briefly touch on this in your initial response to Councillor Rattray's question, but assuming that we come to the two-year review and it's looking really positive, it looks like there's been a real gain, how far do you see that we could potentially roll this out? See, it's only 60 sites of, what's it, 600 odd? So like, how much could we make of this if it does look like it's of a real benefit?
I think there's a balance. To me, I think, as Councillor Rattray pointed out, that there are sites that are used for informal sport or throwing frisbee, dog walking, those types of activities where this long grass regime might not be suitable. But it is a very small proportion of our sites at the moment, so I could see us extending this quite significantly, and maybe sort of doing proportionate of a site, so maybe having half the site that's maintained with long grass and half that's mown quite short, or keeping the grass long around the perimeter or along the tree line,
yeah.
and then closely mowing a smaller area in that. So I think when we recommended the two-year review, it was with a view to getting some early results and then looking to see if we wanted to roll it out across other sites, and then we'd have to survey them and come up with some proposals for those that we'd come back with.
Cool, great, thank you.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah, I've got a couple of sort of comments, half questions. I've got some experience of this because we've been doing mini versions of this in one of the parishes, and I was just wondering, from what I learned from that, is one of the reasons that the review is 2 years rather than 12 is because very often projects like this, you don't actually see proper results in the first year. It takes a little while for things to start to establish and come through. Is that one of the reasons why it's 2 and not 12 months?
It is. I think to see the biodiversity gains that we want to see may take longer than the 12-month period, and hopefully after 2 years we may get some good interim.
Yeah. And so after that 2 years, when you do that review, is that going to be sort of, I can't think the word I'm looking for. Would you sort of take stock of what species and everything you've got in there as compared to before we started? Is that the sort of criteria for whether it was successful or not?
We could do that. We could do a determination on how the biodiversity has improved on the site. We haven't got a baseline, if I'm honest, to do that, but we could do maybe some citizen science projects or someone to see how that biodiversity has improved and what impact that has had to inform any future decisions.
Yeah, thanks for that. And then the other one that sort of didn't come up in the other questions was on page 143 at the top, if I've read it right, it's sort of saying that simply not mowing, although it is good for nature, it doesn't necessarily look as people sort of have expectations sometimes about
when
it's not going to be a meadow, etc. Yeah, and I'm just thinking, as well as communications and things like that, is there a bit of scope there perhaps to do a little bit of information so that it does intervention so that it does look visually more attractive while still supporting the biodiversity aspect? But I'm just wondering if there might be a case for maybe introducing something. So again, not to go back to my pet projects, but one that we're doing in East Gosca is we're reducing mowing in an area, but we're seeding it with like a what we call a flowering lawn mix. So it's not the big tall wildflowers that I appreciate when you have to leave them at the end of the season, they can look a mess and there's a bit of pushback. This is more low level things, but still looks quite attractive. So I just wondered if that had been thought of and if there was a reason why we didn't, or if it's something we could look at maybe a little bit later.
If I could come back, Chair, yeah, it's quite a good question. This was seen as quite an easy step to take, really. I don't think these measures on their own will produce sparkling wildflower meadows that some people may expect. And a lot of the difficulty in getting to those wildflower meadows is that you have to actually kill the grass.
Yes, I know.
To allow those wildflowers to flourish. So on some sites, we've done very small trial areas for a number of years where residents have asked us to get engaged in this sort of thing. We may introduce yellow brattle, which is a plant that will suppress the grass enough to allow the wildflower species to be seeded there. So it's something that we can do, but that's not what we're asking members to do here. We may not do that on all 16 sites. We may be selective one or two sites and introduce that to see what the results are. Mm.
Okay, yeah, thank you. I think that's it. One more, if that's okay.
Yeah.
we have sort of talked about this, but I'm still not quite clear. I don't think I've missed anything in the report, but why specifically were these sites chosen? Was there a reason for these particular ones, or...?
We engaged with external consultants. We were lucky enough to get some external funding to employ some consultant ecologists to look through our land holdings, and they suggested that these sites were the most appropriate, basically. So they're the reason that we've ended up with the sites that we've got. They did look at our GIS mapping layer to select the sites, and they spoke to some county councils across the borough as well.
Yeah. Okay, thank you.
Have you got any more questions on that one? No? Okay, we go to a vote on that one. So are we all happy with the recommendations in the report?
Yes.
Yep.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks, Matt. Thank you. And then if we move to item 7D, we've got the corporate biodiversity strategy. So we've got Councillor Jadeja, and our officers are Katie Mills and Rupert Sims. Councillor Jadeja, do you want to introduce the item?
As you'll see in the papers, this is a cabinet report. It's an early report to just look at the biodiversity. It's a corporate strategy, and biodiversity, so what we're attempting to do here is to pull together planning and other aspects of the Charnwood's policies as a first considerations report. I'm not proposing to go through all of it, but you'll see in the strategy itself that we've pulled together climate change planning, development, open spaces, etc. And we've also looked at pulling together the different policies that are around the new corporate structure. But I'm sure Sizzle will want to add to that.
Katie, Rupert.
So the first considerations report is really what we're doing now, what we could potentially do in the future, and set some indicative objectives. So they're not binding at this stage. It's from consultation with all the different services within the authority.
Thank you.
Yeah, and it's probably worth adding that the first considerations report is the fulfilment of a new statutory duty. So the council as a public body now has an enhanced biodiversity duty, which sort of follows on from the report that Matt just had. So we have a new reporting duty, which includes really what's set out in the first considerations report, which is to report on what the council's doing in fulfilment of that duty. And the first considerations report is about looking at what we're doing now and what else is around us in terms of other strategies and so on, and therefore what we can do next. And it seems to be a happy coincidence that the council had already committed to producing a biodiversity strategy anyway. That seems to bring these two things together. And so broadly, I think there are two strands to this. There's one side which is related to planning and biodiversity net gain, and so we have obligations there, and the other side is the wider work of the council, which very much includes the sort of things that Matt was talking about, but a lot of other things as well.
Thank you. I've not got any questions on this. It's very much a sort of scene setting report at the moment, isn't it? With more information than that will follow in time.
Okay. So this may just be me not quite understanding, or just be good to get some clarity. So there is reference made to S106 contributions. We've got sort of 875,000 already that's underway for some projects, and then more funds sort of forthcoming as and when thresholds are met. And if I'm not mistaken, that means like building the 100th house of 500 and that kind of thing. Are we definitely making use of all of that money and spending it as part of this report? Are we definitely going to utilise all of that and get it spent on projects for biodiversity?
The intention is to do that, and was to do that, regardless of this report.
Yeah.
And we're in the fortunate situation of having that money to spend now. it turns out to be, more challenging than you might hope to sort of throw money at things, because there has to be governance around it to make sure that the what's delivered is what the payment was for, the Section 106 contributions. The other thing that needs to be pointed out is all that money, the circumstances that gave rise to those payments is historic, if you like. There's a new environment under the Environment Act which has changed the way we operate. So we can't just take money off developers now at the moment. There need to be sort of new mechanisms put in place, and that will take time. So we're in a sort of a transitional period, if you like, and I don't mean that in the formal sense of the Environment Act, where we have money to spend and are looking for ways to spend it. And we expect that with future developments from now, some of those will be making offsetting contributions, but they won't be in the form of cash payments to us for the immediate future. But I think what that cash that we now hold allows us to do is, if you like, to sort of play in that world of biodiversity offsetting and set ourselves up, understand how it works, so we're in a very good position, hopefully, in the future to, take advantage, if you like, of the of future payments. But in short answer to your question, we're trying to get that money spent, yes.
Okay, and you know, I mean, I'm sure it's very difficult to say, but do you have, of the £875,000 you've already got, do you know like, the timescale of spending that money might be? When can we start to see the benefit of it?
Some of it has been spent. So £44,000 went to the Haddon Community Woodland. There was some money committed to one of the parish councils, which has fallen through. I'm talking to a number of other organisations, including parish councils, private landowners and land agents, about how we might spend it. A lot of it actually doesn't have a strict limitation within the agreement. Some of, typically, though, it's sort of 5 to 7 years. The biggest challenge, I would suggest, is the three contributions we have in the Shepshed area, because they are the largest together. They represent quite a big chunk of the total, and they are committed within the Shepshed area. So we're really looking to acquire new land in Shepshed again.
Okay, cool. I did have one other question, what was I going to say? Sure, it'll come back to me, don't worry. But yeah, thank you.
Mm-hmm. I've got one, sort of, I think you've more or less covered it with that, but it was around that, sort of the challenges or the constraints in actually getting these things delivered that we've already got funds for. I was just wondering, who are the partners that we work with to do this? So is it our land parishes, or is it... I think maybe the question is, where can we do the offsetting?
Right.
And again, is there a challenge there? Like you said, one parish has fallen through, so I'm just wondering if there's more we could do around there. This is probably two questions, but is there more that we could do with all of those partners to get a bit more buy-in, a bit more education on why this is important? And you know why the money needs to be used.
I think the biggest opportunity for parishes probably, and one or two parishes have recognised this and working quite positively towards it, they've really got it, is that there's the opportunity to create new public open space around their settlements. And that's another thing that I think is a real advantage of having this money, if you like, that isn't constrained. It is constrained in that Section 106, it has to deliver biodiversity, but not in the same way that offsetting done in the new legislative environment is. And so we have a bit more freedom to experiment, if you like. I think there is a real opportunity to meet strategic shortfalls in public open space delivery. So we have projects at the moment that I'm working with the sort of estates department and green spaces department to try and address unmet need in Loughborough, and there are other opportunities as well. I'm being a little bit coy because we're speaking to private partners and this is a public meeting, but in short, if you are able to speak to your parishes and are aware yourselves of landowners in the borough, particularly in on land immediately surrounding settlements, which might traditionally actually be eyed up for development, so that can be challenging. Then we really, really want to hear about it. I think signposting people to us is key.
Is that something we could work on with comms?
I wonder if it might be, actually.
Yeah.
I mean, I think a sort of a broad sort of loudhailer approach might not be the right thing, because you might set hairs running and so on and so forth, but something a bit more discreet and targeted could be.
Can I come in on this? About that, getting various, let's use parishes as an example, there's probably more, about getting that, we touched on it in the last item, about sort of the education around it and why it's a positive thing. And I wonder if there might be, I mean, it might not be something for this, it might be somewhere else, but I just wonder if there might be a bit of scope for almost a bit like a sort of peer-to-peer type thing. So where parishes are doing it very well and they've delivered it, basically asking them if they will go to others and say, this is the project we did, and it was, you know, this was one of the pitfalls, but we overcame it and now it's this. And like I say, after a while sometimes, where you may get a little bit of pushback from residents initially, after a little while, they, especially sometimes, they take quite a lot of ownership over it. So I wonder if there's some scope for helping deliver these sort of biodiversity things through, like, yeah, people taking ownership of it and sort of repair.
I think that is a really good idea, just from the point of view of sort of building capacity in communities, because we kind of learn the most when you're teaching other people about it, really, as a general observation. And you're right, buying from other people when they can see it's being done by people like them, if you like, is great. In terms of directly funding that with the money that we've got, that's a little bit more challenging, but it's not impossible. So, for example, with one of the projects I've been working on with a local group, you know, they've had the land and capacity to implement a project at very low cost, but they're entitled to the money for it because they're producing the biodiversity that attracted the payment in the first place. So they can use that in whatever way they choose to a certain extent. You know, as long as they're delivering that biodiversity for the period that's asked of them, they want to use it to train members of the local community to implement it or to buy training from, you know, from another group, then that's absolutely fine. You know, so it can be done. You know, certainly on the open market, you know, you don't go asking offsetting providers what you do with this money, you just have to see the results. And so, yeah, I think it's really good to be able to think creatively about how you can use that sort of money.
Yeah, thank you.
Just one more thing, if I may. Again, it's probably quite difficult to say, and I know there's quite lengthy timescales on using this kind of money, as you said. Is there any jeopardy or any risk that we might lose out on some of this money? Or are we happy that we'd definitely be able to spend it all in the time frame?
Yeah, there is a risk if we find that we've got to the as some of them are time limited, we need to get on and spend it basically. And if we find that time's run out, we could be at risk of having to pay it back. Now that money's sat with the council, and so it's there to either be spent or, you know, heaven forbid, hand it back. But there's not a risk as such, other than the reputational risk to the council, which I'd say is quite serious. We've taken money off from people and not been able to spend it. But also, with respect to the sort of harm to biodiversity and the council's role in mitigating that in relation to planning. So I think, yes, there are risks that if the money doesn't get spent, there would be a problem, but it wouldn't be a financial risk as such. No. All right.
Yeah. Cheers, thank you. I just want to come in here. It's not my portfolio area, so apologies if I'm treading on toes, but the expectation is that we will spend the bulk of this money, if not all of it, by the as soon as we can, really, because if you think about it, yeah, developers handed it over, and the expectation is that then for us as a council to deliver. And what before Shepshed spends it all, what I was thinking and what I was envisaging, you know, the Woodlands is brilliant, but think of your community, your towns, your parishes, your small villages, but think of making them more greener than they are now, potentially. So I was in Strasbourg, just a coincidence, but some of it you wouldn't expect that you were in a city, actually, because it was very green and very looked after, and it was really good. And just so when you have that vision, and it's about it, it's how can we soften some of our villages, some of our towns, some of our areas, so it's not step around, just on the edge of villages, and how do you think you can make it greener? And this is a pot of money that we can potentially use. I'm not saying it's going to be right for every project to tap into it, but it might be some of the bigger projects where we think actually it costs a lot of money, but delivers a tangible benefit for that settlement. I think that would be something really positive. I am going around the parishes, I am meeting some of the parishes, I've been to Shepshed, I've got Barrow next week and then cycling, but this is something that will be, this plus section 106 to say, well, actually, parishes, we need, the money's yours, we need some of the ideas that you'd like to see delivered. So it's not just a borough council thing, it should be a wider thing, and I think that's what we want to see. So this strategy is brilliant, it comes at the right time, we're going to have an officer in place, it comes at the right time. But then we just want to deliver after that. So that's the next step after this. So hopefully you've seen this, and then you'll see some of the projects that come. And hopefully some of those projects will come from you to say, actually, this is what we'd like to see in our borough, in our wards, in our settlements, whatever it might be. And I was just thinking schools as well, get them involved, but I was thinking so too much.
Thank you.
Councillor
Ernie. You were speaking about the new offsetting style by
developers having their own people hired to do the biodiversity offsetting. Is that going to be pinned down to a proper structure, or is it just something that's been said at the moment?
Yeah, it's controlled by legislation, but what we can't do now, which we could do before, is use a Section 106 agreement to take money off a developer and then spend it in due course.
The money has to be spent. Will we have any influence at all?
Sorry?
Will we have any influence at all in
yes,
the local area?
Yes, we do have some influence, but I have to say, possibly not as much as we did have, and that's just a feature of the legislation. But going forward, any offsetting, so we will still make Section 106 agreements with developers, but it will be for what's termed significant on-site enhancement or habitat creation. So you can imagine some of the SUEs would fall into that category, or for off-site offsetting. But the agreement will be for the developer to provide provide that to a habitat bank and or a registered provider, and the registration process is national. So there's a national register for habitat credits or habitat units, if you like. Now we could become a provider, but we can't mark our own homework, if you like. So we need someone else to sort of ratify any units that we wanted to sell, and we wouldn't necessarily be able to insist that a developer used our units rather than someone else's. So there'd be market forces at play. So that's one example of why we're not quite so much at liberty to do as we previously did. So yes, there is a regulated system. It's not just something that's been said. It's controlled by the Environment Act and the associated guidance and so on.
Thank you. I just wondered, I know if, certainly when I mentioned this to the Marksville Parish Council team, they'll probably be scratching their heads, what could they spend it on? Mm-hmm. Or and is it possible just to do sort of like a two or three examples where the money has been used and can be used successfully, so that we could share that with our parishes, so it gives them an idea of any particular projects for the village parish council?
Yeah, and I'm happy to meet with parish councils, and I have done, and I am meeting with Quorn Parish Council later this week, actually. I think it's this week or next week.
I'm sure Matt's probably really pleased with, you know, to hear about that, because they've got some community projects which would probably be really helpful to learn about.
Yes. Yeah, and I'm happy to do training with ward member, ward members as well on that sort of general thing, if that helps. But could I just come back to the point that Councillor Mia made earlier? I think Councillor, you were talking about greening urban areas, weren't you? And that's something that's, you know, we very much want to see, but quite difficult to retrofit, I think.
I understand.
And so I'm not sure, and I wouldn't rule it out by any means at all. I'm not sure that it's the best approach, and I think, you know, look at these things on a case-by-case basis for using this money, because I think you possibly would end up getting a very small amount of biodiversity uplift for a big chunk of money, and this is just my sense. But, you know, not wanting to sort of dampen your enthusiasm entirely, you did mention schools, and there are a lot of schools, and I have spoken to schools in the past, and I expect you're all in contact with schools one way or another. I know some schools are really tight for playing fields and sports space, some have got acres of space, and they all have biodiversity somewhere in their curriculum and could use biodiversity indirectly in other aspects of the curriculum, be it, you know, literacy, maths, science, art, what have you. You know, so there are definitely opportunities within schools as well.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We got any other questions?
No.
No? We go ahead with the vote then, and we all have to give their recommendations in the report.
Yep.
That's lovely. Thank you.
Cheers, guys. Enjoy the rest of your meeting.
Okay, so we move on to item 8. So we've got pre-decision scrutiny, cabinet response. We go to Nicola Ford.
Thank you, Chair.
This is a report of the cabinet setting out its responses to recommendations of the committee on pre-decision scrutiny.
So detail.
So if we go to item 9, we've got scrutiny powers. Thank you, Chair. This is the report of the democracy. Consider updates on the work of scrutiny powers. The action is requested to review the progression of scrutiny panels and approve any panel scoping documents submitted.
Do you want to take
me
through any updates that we've got on
those? Yes, Chair. The only update really that I've got that is mentioned in the report is that the public transport scrutiny panel last week was cancelled and that will be rearranged in due course.
We don't know that it's cancelled.
Because basically officer availability of the office is going to attend the meeting.
That's fine. Yeah.
Postpone then.
Is the flooding one started now?
Yeah, the first meeting one next week.
Yeah, fine. Okay, if we move to item 10, scrutiny work programme.
Thank you, Chair. This is the report of Head of Democracy to enable the Commission to review and agree the scrutiny work programme.
And that's just the finance. Scrutiny work programme, isn't it? I didn't spot anything on there that needed to be amended or changed.
Did anybody else?
No, it's been a long time ago now.
Yeah. Yep, that's fine. And then the Scrutiny Commission work programme, so this is our work programme.
Thank you, Chair. So this is, of course, again, of Head of Democracy, setting out a list of forthcoming executive key decisions and the group's work programme for consideration and in order to identify items for pre-decision scrutiny.
Now, I didn't spot anything in there that needed to be added in. It actually goes a little bit light over the next few months, doesn't it, with regards to reports going into Cabinet.
I was just going to say, Chair, as we all know, that can change.
Yeah.
Send out the usual email and we'll see what we get, but at the moment there's not a lot really on there.
No, that's fine. We've been sort of heavier in the last few meetings, haven't we? So I think it's expected, like I said earlier, I think with the elections coming up, they like to get the reports out prior to that. But yeah, anything that comes through in the meantime, just let us know and we will have a look at that.
I also mentioned, Chair, obviously members might remember we were meant to have reports on this agenda, but I had to defer those reports because they weren't ready, so hopefully they'll be on the next agenda, just in case you're wondering where they had gone.
Thanks,
Ellie.
And that's it. End of the meeting. Thank you, everybody. Next meeting day is the 29th of April.
I'll come more often to all that place.